Welcome to Stories of Stories. I'm your host, Mike Chin. In each edition of this podcast, I explore the stories behind a specific creative project, process, or experience. I'll be talking about projects on this show with the expectation that either you're already familiar with the project I'm talking about, so for example, if it's a story, you've already read it, or you don't plan to read it. Regardless, what I'm trying to get at is this podcast will include all kinds of spoilers, so please listen no further if you don't want anything spoiled. This episode, I'll be discussing Princess. Princess is a short story I published with Profane Journal at the end of 2016. This is a story about a pedophile. He's sort of a non-practicing pedophile, or at least aims to be, or tries to convince the reader that he is. He spends a goodly portion of the start of this story proclaiming his innocence and arguing about the circumstances that led him to his mindset. And that was a piece of this story that was important to me in writing it. I think it's much more interesting to capture sort of a real person as opposed to a monster. And so this being kind of a mealy-mouthed guy who wasn't entirely confident in what he was doing, and he was trying to equivocate and kind of quibble with things that were unspoken but kind of implied, I think really added to the characterization of this story. I think it's kind of what made the story work, and not just sort of be ugly, but rather be a piece that I was able to finish and a piece I was able to kind of stand behind and ultimately, you know, be pretty proud of, despite the pretty troubling subject matter that it deals with. I should back up, though, and kind of talk about the reason why I wrote this story, what kind of drew me to this story. I first drafted this story when I was in my MFA program. I studied under Nick Dybeck in a course that was all about first-person narrators. Did a lot of great reading in that class, did a lot of really good discussion around kind of craft and what a first-person narrator can accomplish, which was kind of interesting because at that point I've really had kind of come to a point where I was avoiding writing first-person narration. For a long time, that's all that I wrote in, and then when I started to get a little bit more serious about my writing at a certain point, I, for whatever combination of reasons, kind of convinced myself that it should only be first person if it absolutely had to be. I should really err more towards third person. There's something kind of, more artistic about it, maybe. It sort of felt as though I would slip into just being myself with first person. There are a combination of factors going on there. And so taking this class was really impactful for my writing, led to me writing a lot of first person work. But in particular with this story, at one point in the term, there was an assignment around the middle of the term to write a story, and there were a variety of different options for that story, but one of the options to choose from was to write from the perspective of someone we found absolutely reprehensible, kind of like the worst person we could imagine to tell a story, someone we could not sympathize with, someone who we saw as evil, almost. And so in thinking about what I should write, I started to kind of think about that particular prompt, and it really appealed to me in the sense of kind of writing about kind of something that would be outside my wheel, something I wouldn't naturally gravitate to, something where I wouldn't be tempted to just kind of write what I would say and kind of really get into someone else's mindset. And so the point of view of a pedophile was truly one of the most vile and disgusting things I could imagine. I have some people in my life who underwent some abuse when they were younger, and I've seen the movies, I've read the stories, I've kind of been familiar with this to some extent without experiencing it personally, fortunately. But it's one of those things where, having, young people in my life, having worked with children for a significant portion of my professional career, I was really adamant about this being, something that I really could not defend in any way. And so, it was really useful to think about that from the perspective of trying to write this story, and kind of trying to go completely out of my mindset and kind of put myself into what this person might think about. In writing this story, it led me to all kinds of strange places. I obviously did not partake in, any sort of, ogling children or doing anything inappropriate or, searching for anything that I would deem ultimately, unlawful or would not want to be caught looking at. on the internet, but it did lead me some strange places. Of, for example, Googling the rules of Candyland, and Googling what the Disney store was selling in terms of princess dresses, which obviously ties into the story in significant ways. It took me to some pretty interesting places and in using these raw materials in some pretty dark ways. But ended up with a story that I was actually pretty pleased with, in the sense that I thought from a craft perspective, I'd written a really interesting story. It was obviously, very troubling material. Shortly after I finished drafting the story, I discovered the Adam Johnson story, Dark Meadow. I was at the same time taking a seminar on literary magazines and was studying Tin House, and they had fairly recently published Dark Meadow, which is a pedophile story in its own right. Obviously, it goes in very different territory than my story is, and different nuances kind of incorporated. But if nothing else, this is Adam Johnson, who'd published The Orphan Master's Son, who'd won the Pulitzer Prize recently. I would by no means put myself in the same league as Adam Johnson or think that, if he did it, then I should be able to do it and be just fine. But it did demonstrate there was some degree of a market for a story like this, that people would be willing to read a story like this and kind of engage with it, that the content matter in and of itself wouldn't be an immediate, complete turnoff necessarily for some folks. So I tinkered with the story off and on for the months to follow. It was probably a year and a half later, so very late in my MFA program, when I'd kind of gotten tired of working on my thesis stories because they'd kind of gone through their final rounds of revision for that process, and I defended my thesis. I still wanted to go back to those stories and work on them, but I wanted to work on something else in the meantime, and I was still, generating new material, but I also felt like it was time to go back and revise some of the material I'd written earlier on in the program, and this was one of the very first stories that I went back to. So I went through, a few rounds of revision, this was the first one I seriously tackled, kind of outside that thesis process to get ready to send out. I did send it out to a number of places, and early on actually got some really personalized and really encouraging responses from a couple of journals that I respected a lot, which was a good signal to me. I've talked about this in my previous podcasts, but that personalized or higher tier rejection, while it's not an acceptance and while it doesn't mean the work is going out anywhere right that minute, it is kind of a signal that you're on to something, that this story isn't one that's going to just be put in a drawer or that I would be sending off to just any place, but a story that I was going to take pretty seriously and kind of want to see in a serious journal. I sent it off to those first few places, got some good encouraging responses. And then from there, hit a bit of a drought. The next few responses I hit were completely generic kind of rejections, nothing personal about them. It did kind of start to make me kind of question this story a little bit, if it really were working to the extent that it should be, if maybe I should revise it a little bit more seriously, or if the subject matter was really going to be an obstacle. One of the personalized responses I received did sort of hint at that, saying that the editors had read it carefully and discussed it, really got some of the specifics of the story, and said, that they wanted to see more of my work, that they implied that they thought it was strong, but at the same time that was not a story that journal was interested in publishing. I thought about all that. In the meantime, I was researching some other markets where I might potentially send this story, and came upon Profane. Profane Journal is a journal that, as the name suggests, really wants to push boundaries and was very explicit about wanting material that a lot of journals might not want. Not to say that it was going to be bad material, but going to be material that might be unsavory, that might be something that some readers might not be comfortable with. This wasn't the journal you were going to show off, to your grandmother or your friends from church necessarily. Sent it to them in a few other places simultaneously, and then a few months later, Profane did get back to me and accepted the story. And I think that this was a really good demonstration of sometimes it not being a matter of the quality of a story dictating, where you send it or where it ends up, but really finding the appropriate fit. And I think this journal was really a good fit for this particular story. I was really happy with the way that they worked with me on it from there. I was pleased to do an interview with them and record an audio version of the story. It was a really good experience from that point forward, and one that I was grateful for. All right, so that's about a wrap on Princess at this point. So we'll move along here to Mike's monthly endorsement. So as an artist, I do feel it's important to be consuming other things and to see, you know, what interests and inspires you and see what's already out there and see what's come before you. So at the end of episodes, I'm recommending a book, story, a movie, a TV show, a band, a wrestling match, etc. That may have escaped a huge mainstream audience or maybe a little dated now and at the cusp of being forgotten, but that I would recommend. So for this podcast, I'm going to be talking about another podcast, actually, which is called How Did This Get Made? This is a podcast hosted by Paul Scheer, June Diane Raphael, and Jason Mantzoukas, as well as a rotating kind of roster of guest hosts. But the basic mission of this podcast is that they look at a movie and they kind of break down what's going on with that movie. And kind of the twist is that more often than not, it's a bad movie, a movie that has some serious flaws. Often is not, you know, a movie that's entertaining, that has a following, that has its own, you know, kind of factors that do appeal to us, but there might be a guilty pleasure, for example. So I got kind of hooked on this podcast. My friend referred me to it with the episode about the movie Wild Wild West with Will Smith from the 90s. That's a movie that I had actually never seen, but just kind of the takedown of that film is just really shrewd and thorough and clever. And you know, there's some really kind of cool insider bits to it. Kevin Smith is the guest on that particular episode, and they talk about working with one of the producers for the film. And this is a little bit of a spoiler, so if you don't want to hear anything about that, feel free to skip ahead, you know, 20-30 seconds. They talk about how his producer was kind of consumed with the idea of having a giant spider in a film that they were working on earlier, even though that wouldn't make very much sense for the movie they were making. And after that film where it didn't really work out, the spider didn't go in, the same producer was working with Wild Wild West, and sure enough, that giant spider does turn up at the end of Wild Wild West. And it's just showing kind of how arbitrary and kind of personal that choice was without artistic merit. I think it's just a really interesting window into the movie making business, particularly when you look at mainstream films, you know, made at kind of that highest level in a major studio. Some of my favorite episodes, though, I mean, so they record often. I believe I forget if it's every other week or if it's monthly now. I know they do mini episodes between their full-fledged episodes. But in any event, some of my favorites, that they've done movies like Over the Top and No Holds Barred, some of these great, you know, 80s and 90s films. I'm not saying the films are great, but they are kind of, again, these guilty pleasures. They're films that I know well that I kind of love in spite of myself. And I really like kind of the treatment because they do kind of break down the film and really look at the most problematic pieces and kind of poke some fun at it, but also you'll do it with some love. It's clearly not just kind of a mean-spirited podcast where they tear apart something that's bad, but more so a podcast where they seem genuinely to love the movie industry and kind of to talk about you know, why decisions are made, and kind of to, you know, from an artist's perspective almost, talk about you know, where these films don't work. Or what choices seem really odd. Another facet of this podcast that I really enjoy is they have a segment they tend to end the show with where they call it Second Opinion. So they go to Amazon.com and they collect all of these 5-star reviews of the films they've been talking about and talking about what's not working with, which are generally speaking just sort of random. You know, a person who doesn't really know how Amazon works and is talking about Amazon itself or the Amazon delivery service or the technology of DVDs as opposed to the actual movie, or people who just kind of are off their rocker and kind of will you know, talk about how a movie is amazing and how it clearly has, you know, changed the world in some way, in ways that just kind of seem bonkers, and I just think it's a really fun feature of this podcast. And so on top of all of that, I think that there are some parallels between How Did This Get Made and what I try to do with this podcast, Stories of Stories. Again, this is not an area where I would claim to have anywhere near their following or near their proficiency with you know, generating a podcast or to be as entertaining as they are. But that core kind of piece of looking at a project and looking at kind of, you know, what's underneath it and kind of how did it happen, why did it happen, I think that was influenced by that podcast. As a podcast, I'd enjoyed for a period of years before I ever even thought to start my own. All right. Well, that's about all for this episode. As always, I want to thank Mike Peek for the theme music for this show. And I want to welcome you all to check out this podcast again. Again, it is a monthly thing that I do, and I always love to have listeners for the show, so I don't feel like I'm just talking to myself. And I always welcome folks to chime in. If you ever have any questions or want to discuss this further, please do feel free to be in touch with me. Twitter is one of the most effective ways to do that. At Mike T. Chin is my Twitter handle. All right, so I'm wishing you all good health, happiness, and creativity, and I'll catch you next time.